Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, January 27th. I'm Ray Graff. We talk antiques today, and welcome back Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas of Stair in Hudson, New York, founded by Colin Stair, a fourth-generation furniture specialist, and featuring a team of experts with over 150 years of combined experience. Stair is one of the leading regional auction houses in America. If you think you've uncovered a hidden treasure and need some help figuring out what it is, maybe what it's worth, give us a call. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the phone number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Colin Stair, Lisa Thomas, and your antique questions coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. A fun day in store today. We're discussing antiques with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas of Stair in Hudson, New York. Colin is a fourth-generation furniture specialist. He worked for Sotheby's in New York and England before opening Stair in 2001. He was an early innovator of online auction technology and has successfully balanced the expectations of the modern marketplace with the charm of a traditional auction house. Lisa Thomas is director of the Fine Arts Department at Stair. She began in the Department of Paintings and Sculpture at the Museum of Modern Art in New York City. At Christie's, Lisa was in charge of contemporary prints at Multiples and was also responsible for the appraisal and sales of 20th century European, American, and historical American prints. She has been a specialist on Antiques Roadshow. Number to call here is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org with your antiques questions. Colin Stair, Lisa Thomas, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you.
Terrific, Ray. Thank you.
Before we get started again, thank you for being on the program with us over at the Hart Clewitt this summer. That was a fun live show.
It was such a great day. We loved it.
Yeah, that was really cool to interact with everybody in person and so enthusiastic. So,
and we saw some amazing things, actually.
Sure did.
You never know with that kind of event, and it was fantastic.
Yeah, more Troy history also, which was fascinating.
Yeah, it was great.
I remember the pinball machine quite fondly.
The pinball machine was really cool.
You don't see a portable pinball machine.
Right, the packaging that it came in.
Yes,
very cool.
Indeed, yes, indeed.
So what's new at Stair?
Well, we are busy, ending a very busy year last year and then getting started this year. We've had one auction and have a few more this week, we're off and running.
It's Americana Week at Stair.
Traditionally,
the end of January at all the auction houses has been Americana.
Now, why the end of January?
It's a thing. Everybody huddles together and focuses on this one market of Americana, American furniture, and American art. Christie's, Sotheby's, right down to the little old Stair galleries. Yeah. The Winter Antique Show takes place in New York, which we all spend a number of days there looking at
things going on right now.
With people. So it's everything has its season. The modern world has its season in May and November, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's a cool time of year.
It seems like an artificial construct.
It is. Sort of modern in the spring.
Yeah, it is.
But it makes a structure for the auction seasons, and people look forward to it. And for the big marquee sales in the city, for example, or London and Paris, people are able to make travel plans in advance because they know they're going to want to be in New York for the May sales. So we follow along.
Yeah.
And we've got two great Americana sales this week, which is fun.
Yeah, pretty exciting stuff.
Now we'll go into what sort of things you have in a moment, but this being the year of the 250th birthday of the U.S. of A., any extra focus this season?
You know, Ray, I got to be honest. I'm a little torn about this one. Not quite sure that I want to monetize that. It feels a little weird to me. I can't quite.
Wouldn't that be the time to monetize it?
I don't know, but my P.T. Barnum button's not working on this one. I thought about maybe having the British sale. Could be kind of fun.
That's funny.
Take a counterpoint.
We've been thinking about it. We've been tossing ideas around. We definitely don't want it to go totally unnoticed, but we're just trying to decide the best way to do it. And we do often have another Americana sale in the summer.
August, so
that may be the time when we really focus on it.
Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas join us for an antiques edition of Vox Pop. They are from Stair in Hudson, New York. Just thought of this. Over across the pond, where you both have worked from time to time, is Americana even a thing? Do they care?
Zero.
Really?
Don't care at all. They love other cultures, African. I mean, you name it, just about everything. I think the English and the French are interested. But every once in a while, though, a great piece of American furniture will turn up in England. And that just happened recently. And it's a complicated, long story. But it does happen that somebody brought something back in the 18th century.
Right.
Now, do you think that this is just because there's not as much stuff over there? People from Europe came here en masse in the 1700s, 1800s.
These were the colonies, and they had far superior made things there, so they wouldn't necessarily ship things.
Yeah.
I often think about Benjamin Franklin's son, who was a loyalist, who went back to England.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was interesting. As a loyalist, went back to England, ordered a set of chairs, I think from Thomas Chippendale, mm-hmm. because he wanted British quality furniture. But when he moved back to England, I wonder what he took with him.
Interesting.
You know, and so the transfer and migration of people and the objects and the people who made them, to me, culturally, is one of the more fascinating things.
Yeah, and there's a lot of crossover stylistically. You know, we see, especially in the fine art area with portraiture, early American portraiture looks like English portraiture, the obvious reasons. So there was a lot of back and forth and sharing in terms of taste and style. Of course, the early settlers were English, fully English,
yeah.
And they brought all of their English belongings with them. So a lot of early Americana is copying early English and Dutch furniture, ceramics, and
painting
fine
styles.
Art.
Yeah. The culture just moved back and forth with people. It's just endlessly fascinating.
It's Antiques Today on Vox Pop. If you have a treasure you would like the experts to discuss, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is our number. 800-348-2551. Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas from Stair in Hudson, New York, join us today. So the auction is coming up. It's Americana related. What sort of things will we see?
Oh, as Lisa said, we've got some wonderful folk portraits, I think, that come from a very, very prominent collector
mm-hmm.
with extraordinary provenance. These are sort of pictures of children that are naively painted.
Yeah, and one of them is actually from a young girl who grew up in Saratoga. Louise Stover was her name, the Stover family in Saratoga.
So, the subject of the painting?
The sitter in the painting, young girl with her dog, so of local interest. We actually get a lot of interesting Americana from the Hudson Valley, Albany area, very rich in Americana.
Yeah, yeah.
So we often have things that are really of local interest.
So you're an auction house, so people come to you. You're not out actively searching for it? No,
I mean, but once we get on the scent, you know, we sort of turn up, people call, send emails with pictures, connect us with somebody through somebody else. But yeah, we have to be pretty dogged about finding things.
Really interesting.
It's the only business where you have to work just as hard to, well, not the only one, of course, but to get the material to sell. It's like there's no tap. There's
right.
nobody to call and 10 more of those, please. And then you've got to find people to buy it. So there's a lot of mechanics that go on in between time.
You know, I could see if somebody has stuff, old stuff they want to sell, valuable stuff, them contacting you. But it must be kind of a delicate dance if you're beating the bushes to get some, say, Americana stuff for an auction. What if you find it? What if someone says, I didn't ask for you. I don't want to sell it. How do you deal with that?
Well, I mean, they called us, right?
Oh, okay, so that's how it starts.
Yeah,
okay.
we start that way, I think, Lisa, right? I
mean, yeah,
and
absolutely.
We give our advice, we give our opinion, and they usually ask 2, 3, 4, or 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little like WebMD these days, I think, for us.
So they're getting a lot of opinions.
Quick noodle search and looking around online, I think, can be helpful and can be harmful depending on what you're looking at.
How can it be helpful, assuming that the cut, and I don't want to go into your business too much, but the cut that an auction house gets, probably more or less the same. How can it matter all that much? You're going for reputation, right? It's going to be priced the same.
And we want interesting things, and we want things that maybe haven't been seen or haven't been on the market recently, say. So if a dealer came to us and said, hey, I want to sell these 10 things, well, maybe you've been trying to sell them and they haven't sold for a while, not ideal. But if my mother bought this 50 years ago, that's sort of more of a compelling story. And, do you know where she bought it? And here's the receipt and here's the information. That becomes more of a compelling story.
And for many people, it's a very personal transaction that they're going through, especially if it's an estate of a loved one or it's a collection that they personally have put together over the years. So there's a very personal component, and it really matters to them who the auctioneer is. So it really has to be a good fit on both sides. Good property, and they have to like us and have trust in us. And
in many cases, people are recommended to us by a personal recommendation that sort of starts the whole thing rolling. Lisa and I did one of those on the ride here, mm-hmm. talking to somebody about how to it all starts that way. And we make a visit. We see the client. We go to their house. But as Lisa said, we're dealing with people that are grieving, you know, or that have lost somebody in their family. It's never, you know,
unpleasant divorce.
It's the
3 D's.
Yes, yes. You know, so
do they ever freak out when you show up with the snowplow?
No, not yet.
Handy to have it this time of year, though. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have an antique question for Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas today, you can email voxpop@wamc.org. What's the oddest bit of Americana that you have ever accepted and auctioned?
Right. Man, you got me there.
Really?
Your definition of odd is.
Yeah. It's not an area that has odd.
Some of those potty chairs, yeah. I have to say, they're.
Yeah, they were. Also,
I mean, they're very common, but it's sort of an odd thing to have.
It is sort of la toilette. I guess it's a little. Yeah. That's a little bit strange. That's going to rank up there, but I'm going to give that a good think, I think.
All right. You know, I'm going to withdraw the question. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll get to the calls in a moment. It's Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas from Stair in Hudson, New York. You got an antique? Aside from maybe a loved one, you can call in and we'll talk about it. Frank Zappa here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair join us from Antiques Gallery. Gallery, not anymore. It's Stair Gallery in Hudson, New York. Here's the thing. If I have, say, in my garage, this really great bloodletting bowl, how much can I get for it?
Well, that's a great question. Most of them were made in the Netherlands or in England, or it's Chinese export. And they were used by barbers and various physicians, and they ranged at $200 to probably $100,000.
So in the Netherlands, it was okay for the barber to cut you?
And bloodletting. And then the leech bowls, which we talked a little bit about as well.
What's a leech bowl?
It's where you would have kept your leeches for, you know, blood sucking and getting rid of blood.
And you said just a moment before the break that you couldn't think of any odd things, all right? These are odd. These are very odd.
These are odd things.
And some of the things we can't talk about are even odder. Let's go to the – and believe you me, folks, that would be a show. Let's go to Fred in Gilderland.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I have a question about an antique book. It is in poor condition, but it's Irving Berlin – Irving Knickerbocker's History of New York, beginning of the world to the end of the Dutch dynasty. This is from 1848 by Putnam, or published by George Putnam. Okay. Does that have any value?
Does the publication date from Putnam, is that in the book, the date it was actually published?
1848.
Okay.
Yeah, it can be worth a little bit of money. The condition, unfortunately, there's a lot of those out there. I still see them. I'm afraid they're probably not worth a lot of money given the condition issue. I had a client once that had one of those. His great-grandfather had custom bound it in a beautiful binding, and it was worth about $2,000.
Yikes, that's good.
Yeah, but that was a very special. It was a big, prominent New York family, and they're sort of their provenance and family. But in bad condition with a cloth binding, I'm afraid you're going to find something that's probably under a couple hundred dollars, I'm afraid. But there's lots of sources to look at out there for these, as all books should be cherished.
And there are a few online book dealers who specialize in this area. So if you noodled around a little bit online, I think you'd find somebody. You could either sell it to them directly or they would take it on consignment. But as Colin said, I think that because it's paper, condition becomes the significant issue.
Yeah, it's in bad shape.
Wow. All right. Well, Fred, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Now, specifically, or even generally, Does Stair do a lot of antiquarian books?
You know, we do, because there's a large gaping hole in the market for books that's between $500 and $3,000 or $4,000. Mm-hmm. So we have a university collection we're going to be selling. Lisa and I were talking today to somebody that has several thousand books. We're trying to pare it down to a few hundred. That was a major contemporary collector, so we would sell some of those. But there's very specific book auction houses that just do this.
Age isn't always the main thing, right?
No. We sold an Andy Warhol cookbook illustrated by Andy Warhol, colored by Susie Frankfurt, for $50,000.
Yeah. Hang on. A cookbook with illustrations by Warhol.
Is it Wild Strawberries?
Yeah. Raspberries.
Wild Raspberries.
Wild Raspberries. Wow. Andy Warhol illustrated book. But the truth is that, you know, most or many collectors who have large collections, they have an intellectual curiosity about what they collect. And so they have a lot of books. So a lot of the collections that we work with, we go into these homes and apartments, and they're huge, really deep book collections. And it can be problematic because they're difficult to sell at auction.
Yeah.
People aren't really buying books the way they used to. So.
No, and for somebody who I sort of roughly counted the other day between what I have at my house upstairs in Lisa's office and downstairs, I have a couple of thousand books in my little world.
And what do you collect personally?
Nothing.
No? Just general things?
I had two kids to educate.
Yeah.
Money was the answer.
You know, the topic of encyclopedias came up at my house the other day, and it was a big deal. We had Encyclopedia Britannica.
So did we, yeah.
Now, my kids know nothing about this.
No, and you see them just tossed on the street.
Yeah.
You know, people, yeah.
I collect the things that I really love, whether it's a piece of furniture or a piece of artwork, and it's something I can squeeze in the house, I'll go for it. But I love the stuff.
It's Antiques Today with Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair from Stair in Hudson, New York. 800-348-2551 is the number. Before we hit the phones again, let's go to the email bag. Mike writes in, I have a small dresser with an attached mirror. It has a sticker on the back, Empire, with numbers for an order number and dresser number 501 1/2 BEM. I doubt it's worth much and would like to sell it, but I don't want to give it away give away the farm if it is in fact worth something. How do I go about it? If it's got a sticker, it's probably not too...
Yeah, you could start by feeding that entire thing right into Google. I'm sure it would tell you. And I'm going to guess that this is probably made in the Midwest, 1880 to 1900. That chest of drawers with a mirror plate on top seems like a part of something. It might have been part of a larger group. I'm going to guess it's probably made from quarter sawn or a white oak. So it's furniture we loosely refer to as Victorian.
Yeah.
So probably not worth a lot of money in this downward sort of mode that we're in.
Are we still in that downward mode?
You know what? We're seeing a nice little uptick in the last year. A nice little uptick. I'm very cautiously optimistic.
And to what do you attribute that?
I don't have the answer to that.
The cyclical nature of the art market.
Yeah, interesting.
We hit rock bottom, and then we're on the way back up. Maybe everybody sat home on their Eames sofas with all the crumbling foam, and they're like, this stuff isn't that comfortable. I need a real sofa. I'm not sure, Ray.
You know, it's funny. During the pandemic and just after the pandemic, collectibles seem to be on the rise. We've had stamps and coin guys, baseball card people on things, comics. Things were going up. And I haven't asked them if it's sort of dissipated since
because those people couldn't get on a plane, couldn't go into a hotel, couldn't do anything. So I think they stayed home. We saw, enormous prices paid for during the first year of the pandemic. Silly, but fantastic.
But fantastic,
it was great.
The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go now to Carrie in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Carrie, you're on. Hello.
Extremely interesting guest today.
They sure are.
But, yeah. What I have is I have every weekly edition of the 1869 Harper Weekly's newspaper. Now, I know that due to its large circulation back in its day, it's not that uncommon. And unfortunately, it's post-Civil War. But, you know, except for the paper itself being fragile and showing its age, you know, I was just wondering if there is any value. I don't intend on, I intend on keeping it, but I'm just curious.
Okay.
Okay, that's a really great question. And did you buy these as a group, or they were left to you?
No. Actually, when my parents bought a home in 1961, I was up in the attic looking around, and there it was.
Ah.
Well, you hit it on the head. The ones that, during the Civil War and the illustrations and things being chronicled there really, really, really made a difference and made those more desirable. I think it's going to be a hard guessed number to put on, Lisa. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is a collectible area, but as Carrie said, you know, they're not particularly rare. You can find them fairly easily, again, because their paper condition becomes an issue, and the inks that they were printed with tend to fade and erode. So, you know, that would be an issue. But there is a market for them, and we do see them in the online marketplaces. You know, eBay, for example, sells a lot of them.
Yeah.
And depending on the actual issue and its condition and how the inking is held up, you know, it's going to be anywhere from a few dollars to maybe $40 an issue, something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe the entire collection might be worth a few thousand dollars, but it's finding that buyer is going to be rare as hen's teeth.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Carrie, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. If you'd like to call and ask Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair a question, and you have a lot of experts there. And we met another one.
Lauren Anderson was with us.
Lauren, when we were at the event.
Mm-hmm.
How many different, there are so many different specialties. We talked about antiquarian books.
Yeah.
I assume, Lisa, you're tasked with doing a lot of that stuff.
Yep, some of the books.
How many different experts do you have over there?
Well, there's four or five of us, and then sort of Lisa has a junior cataloger that helps her with cataloging and doing some research, because we're still a pretty small organization, Ray. You know, so a Sotheby's might have 80 or 100 specialists in one building in New York alone. But what we have is this collective of people like our friend Mr. Tripp in the coin world. You know, you want to know about a coin, a metal, a tapestry, it's like 30 seconds or less.
Yeah.
I mean, so this wheelhouse of brilliant people. We just spoke to a very prominent American painting dealer on the way here. So we have this network of people to call on, I suppose, above and beyond.
The number here is 800-348-2551. When you do this auction coming up on Americana, is this all remote now? I know you're a pioneer of this sort of thing.
It's all live, and when we broadcast the sales online and people can bid online, which is about 85% of what people do, but we still get some diehard fans that turn up and get a free muffin and a cup of coffee.
Especially for Americana, I have to say, it's a buyer pool that really likes to bid in person.
Very New England
old school
centric. You know, we have our famous Lloyd who ran for mayor in Hudson who also turns up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting concept in Hudson.
And who makes the muffins?
Somebody at Nolita Bakery.
So you're outsourcing.
Good for you. Oh, yeah, yeah.
800-348-2551. Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas are here to answer your antiques questions. And let's go to Pittsfield. It's Chester. Chester, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. I have a sort of a unique item. I have a rocking horse, a children's rocking horse, that is painted by Peter Hunt. My grandfather met Peter on Cape Cod in Provincetown many, many moons ago and had commissioned him to paint this rocking horse for his grandkids. And I still have it. It has no hair or no tail, but it is beautifully, you know, Peter Hunt, beautifully painted.
Yeah, that's a painter
is
that
it
I'm,
worth anything?
I'm sort of familiar with, but I've never seen one of these. And I'd say the answer is yes, it's definitely worth something. Not necessarily his medium sort of thing, so you got to subtract a bit of that. But he's definitely really well known and collected, and that would be something that certainly would bear doing a little research. I mean, you might have the one and only. Okay. So it's going to be hard, Lisa?
Right. I mean, I know I think he did, if I'm not mistaken, he did more furniture, correct?
He sure did.
Painted furniture. But,
you could argue this was in the furniture category.
It is in, rocking horses are, it's a collecting area unto itself.
Yeah.
So certainly some appeal there.
What a cool thing. But I think bear doing some more research. I couldn't come up with the price, but I would be, it's not an inexpensive thing, and would love to take it out, take a look at it. Very, very cool. And you may want to find a horse in the field somewhere and see if you could borrow some of his hair. We did this recently.
Recreate the tail.
I literally work with horses.
There you go. Find a good one.
I could do that easily.
Well, Chester, thanks for the call.
Chester, that's very cool.
Interesting point, though.
Yeah.
And this came up during the live event we did at the Hart Clewitt. Is it okay in some circumstances to take an old piece, an antique piece, and then try to fix it up?
In many cases, it is, you know, because, you know, it's what it was. So it's restoration. You don't want to embellish something. But the trick in our business, if you do that, you've got to tell the person you're selling it to. So if it becomes a commercial thing,
yeah,
and the truth in that. But that sounds like a really interesting rocking horse. I've always loved those. We sell, they're hard to find really, really great ones. But when they're great, they're really terrific.
The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Lisa Thomas from Stair and Colin Stair from Stair are here to answer your antiques questions. Let's go to Merle in Argyle. Okay, hello, Merle.
Hello. I got an extra question for you. So I'll ask that one so you can just ring it in your head. The extra question was, I have a copy of the Constitution. And I asked this question a few years ago, so just seeing if it's going up in value. It's with the amendments, with I believe the 14th Amendment freeing the slaves. The book was published before it was ratified. It just says until ratified, so it sort of dates it at in 1865, whenever mm-hmm. they did the 14th Amendment,
mm-hmm.
but it hadn't been ratified, but it was ratified within the year. So, anyway, that's one thing. The other question is just a sort of general, like when they have Mark Lawson is on, and you guys have sort of hit on it a little bit. The antique market is, if it's before ninth furniture, we're talking about. If it's before 1950, nobody wants it. But you sort of said there's a little uptake.
There is. It's getting now, better, Merle, without a doubt. I think we've seen a serious uptick in things in the last 18 months, 2 years myself. Did you ever get a value on this Constitution previously?
It's a book.
It's a book,
you know, it's a book.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
From Mark Lawson.
So. Good.
Okay.
You know, I'm competing with him.
Right.
No,
yes,
no,
we
no.
Get
we're
you,
all
we
we're all it. Friends and family here in this business, trust
yeah.
me.
Well, not in the radio business, but speak for yourself. So anyway, what do you think?
I don't know. I kind of think, you know, to our 250th year thing, I think I'd see a little uptick,
yeah,
don't you?
I think so, too. And there have been some strong prices recently for what we call yeah. Americana, yeah. You know, ephemera.
Might just be a good time to give your young niece or nephew this book as well to read.
Yeah, there you go.
You know.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Thank you, Merle. And now let's go down. Let's go over to Pittsfield. Robert, you're on.
Hi there, folks.
Hello.
Hi.
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 Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Hey, what I have is I found in my mom's sewing box a acorn thimble, or no, excuse me, an acorn-shaped sterling silver with a thimble inside in her sewing box.
Wow.
Well, that's a so it's a thimble in the form of an acorn.
Well, no, it's a silver acorn made up like an acorn, but it's made of silver, and you open the top, and the thimble's inside.
It's an acorn box with the
I see.
A little.
What a yep. beautiful sounding thing!
It
My
does
gosh.
Sound lovely.
I bet you it's got little.
Yeah, and it's got like a little eyelet on the top where you could attach it to something. But you open up the acorn, and the thimble comes out, and around the thimble it says Gladys 89. I don't know Gladys. I never met her. But.
That sounds like a nice piece of Americana silver.
It sure does. Yeah, it sounds like a really wonderful thing. And these were made quite often, and thimbles were a part of every American household and at every economic level. You know, sewing and doing handiwork. It was. Could be silkwork pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lisa, needlepoint.
Right.
From the aristocracy all the way down to a seamstress.
I mean, Queen Victoria did it every day, right? Yeah. So I think. And
it looks old, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a very beautiful thing. A lot depends on the makers and things. You know, because they're probably made en masse and a lot of them, I'm going to guess it's probably worth between $100 and $200. just guessing here, but what a nice thing to have right. and to be to have handed down and nice little thing to display on a little display cabinet or something.
With the price of gold now, I know a thimble doesn't weigh a lot.
No, no, gold's way up, so that has a lot to do with things.
I thought it was silver though.
Silver's up too. But if you're asking about gold, that's gone up. Silver's almost $90 an ounce, I think today, maybe a little more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I'm talking about the gold thimble that's inside.
It's a gold thimble inside.
Yeah, well, that's a different acorn altogether, Robert. But but yes, gold is going to have a large effect on that. But please, don't scrap it. Keep it, but be aware of it so you get yourself a little scale. Throw it on there just so you know what it's worth. You know?
Wonderful. Robert, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Antiques Today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas to Munson, Massachusetts. And it's Judy. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, surprisingly. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Okay, you're on.
All right. Well, my question is, I went to a New England auction nearby, and I found one of my famous Southwest artists' piece in it, and I bought it, but it's a signed artist proof. So I'm wondering if it has value as a signed artist proof. I looked the piece up, and he had it printed in a bunch of different colors. So this is one of, I think, six colors he had it printed in. Mm-hmm. But it is signed and dated, and it's from the 70s.
Sure. So, yes, it does have value. It was by the artist. It obviously, since he has signed it and inscribed it artist proof, it is by that artist as opposed to being a print made after an artist's work, which is considered more reproductive.
Who's the artist?
She didn't say.
R.C. Gorman.
Oh, R.C. Gorman. Okay. So, I mean, I'm sure you probably know artist proofs are part of the overall edition when an artist makes a print. Before they actually number the print out of, let's say, 50, 1 over 50, 2 over 50, et cetera, they would pull a series of proofs to check the color with their master printer, and then they would settle on what the final print was going to look like, and they would pull a handful of artist proofs that match exactly with the numbered edition, but ended up not being part of the numbered edition. So that's what you have. It's signed and inscribed properly. So it's considered part of the overall edition and would have the same, you know, value as one of the numbered pieces.
Judy, thanks a lot. We're overdue for a break here. It's Antiques Today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Back in a flash. So that's how much the Thomas Kincaid prints I have are worth? Okay. Well, let's just skip it for now. 800-348-2551 is the number. And, you know, Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair. Lisa, you're the sort of the art expert. I recall that there was an auction of some of, what's his name? The mellow dude who paints.
Bob Ross.
Bob Ross.
The mellow dude. And you knew it immediately, yes. Colin.
I rewatch it, but I spaced on the name.
The hair.
But they were doing an auction of some of his actual works to support public broadcasting out west. How much is that stuff worth?
A lot.
He has a huge following. My husband also is a huge fan.
We like that. We like him too.
Yeah.
I don't pass it on the television. Oh, there's Bob Ross.
Yeah, he has a huge following.
Right, yeah.
So I think there's quite a market for
that. I sort of followed that auction a little bit, and I couldn't recall the prices right now, but I was like, my gosh, that's a lot of money for Bob Ross.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's really market driven.
It's absolutely. Totally. Yeah.
And so, timing.
Right.
Timing,
so
timing.
40 years ago, Leroy Neiman might have made you some money.
Maybe. Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
800, but not Thomas Kincaid, apparently. 800-348-2551 is the number. And a couple emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. Somebody included a picture. All right. I have found this print and wondered if you have any ideas. 1887 lithograph signed C. Spiegel Jr., Charles, who apparently also illustrated commercial products. And this is from Tara. It's a lovely picture. It says, "Where the wood nymph loves to dwell," which is apparently a very old mill.
Oh, let's see.
There you go. 800-348-2551. It's Antiques Today with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas. And, you know, a reminder, it's radio, so pictures don't work all that well.
And it's not easy to get these pictures over the radio, is it? Right?
No, it's really not. And it happens every time. It just is what it is.
It looks like an engraving. I can see a plate mark here. And it definitely looks like a book illustration. Beyond that, it's difficult to say exactly what it would be worth. But I would, you know, I'm going to say based on the subject matter and the quality of the printing, you're probably in the sort of $50 to $75 range.
I mean, if the wood nymph is dwelling there, you know, she's slumming it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. This is a long email with also several pictures, but I'll read a little of it because Dwayne seems very nice. I just happened to catch the show you have on today. Really love your show. I'm happy when I'm able to get out there and catch it. Good for you. I have a postcard that was sent from Pablo Picasso to a friend of his in, I believe, Belgium in 1905. The postcard is written on both sides. It was addressed and postmarked, so I'm assuming it was received as it would expected to be. Picasso appears to have written on both sides of it when he couldn't finish the wording on the normal side. He wrote on the front side of the postcard and around the edges. The postcard image is painting from the Netherlands University that he was visiting, and it says that in the writing. It's in Spanish, and my Spanish was a little rough, but I had a friend help me translate years ago. Basically says greetings to his friend. Don't remember the name now. I'm in Holland, visiting university. Hope you're well. Look forward to seeing you again, along with a couple other notes on there. I've never had the postcard verified, but it appears legitimate. The writing on it appears to have been done in small brush with ink. The condition is good, some rounding of the corners. I'm an artist. I acquired it from another artist that was living and working in New York City years ago. Of course, I'm a little bit curious what something like this might be worth. And I'll show you the picture, even though no one else can see the picture.
Okay.
Lisa and Colin can see the picture.
Beautiful old handwriting. Yeah, lovely. Anything by or about Picasso, of course, is very saleable in the marketplace. The issue is authenticity and having it documented.
Now, could you have a handwriting expert look at this?
I mean, Picasso's signature is easily identifiable and can be authenticated by a Picasso expert.
Yeah.
And that's something that would have to be done. It would fall into the category of Picasso ephemera, and the value really would be in the signature. If historically what he's written is of interest to a scholar, for example, it could be something that might be of interest for an exhibition, something like that, something more academic. But, you know, with Picasso and all of these very famous artists, authentication is key, and it would need to be looked at by a
specialist. Is that an expensive process for the sort of average person who has a postcard like this?
It is expensive. Some of the artist foundations will look at photographs and give you sort of a yes or no without charging very much money. And then we've had to send things to France multiple times where we've had to pay thousands and thousands of dollars to have them looked at and properly documented.
Okay, well, you're an auction house and you have to make money. Then do you tack that on to the price at the auction?
Well, generally the consigner would foot that bill. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's talk about hypothetical theoretical value, assuming it's real.
Theoretically, a postcard with some ink writing and a real Picasso signature. As I said, the value is going to be in the signature. You're probably, $800 to $1,200, $1,000 to $1,500.
Okay.
Again, if it's of particular academic interest, some very interesting period in Picasso's life, and once it's translated, it sounds like in the Spanish, it's probably early in his career, that could be of academic interest to someone.
Lisa Thomas and Colin Stair are here. It's Antiques Today, and we'll go do one more email, and then we'll get back to the phones. 800-348-2551. This is from Ellen. Great-grandmother's silver tea coffee service has her monogram. Not sterling silver, but plate silver. She was born around the Civil War, died in 1917. Anything worth appraising there?
Certainly is. And at the bottom of all of those pieces, there's probably a name or several marks we could look at and give you a much better sense.
Even plate?
Even plate will be marked. And Lauren will yell at me when I get back for this, no doubt, because I've seen all the plate marked, whether it's Black Star and Frost, Kirk and Sons. You don't see a lot of Tiffany plate, but it certainly does happen. Of course, sterling, there's always a baseline because it's sterling silver,
right,
and the metal basis. Unfortunately, people aren't gifting, giving, or using silver tea and coffee services. So it's supply and demand. There's still the same supply, but a lot less demand. So definitely some value there. Look after it and, happy to help. But yes, I mean, let's take a American generic 1880 silver plate service, you're probably looking in the $600 to $1,000 range, I'd say.
Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go down to Florida. Now, if you're listening, please. In Florida, Lecanto, Florida, Sheila, I got to say, we had a couple feet of snow and we're a little ornery. But welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello. Here I am.
Okay, what do you got?
I have a set of four novels that were written by Winston Churchill. And on the front page, or rather one of the first page of one of the books, he has an inscription. And he says, the inscription in his handwriting, I assume, says, to my friend and classmate, C.S., and the name looks like Book Walter, with my regards, and it's his signature. And there are four of them. They're leather bound. They're not in good condition, but I believe they're novels.
Huh.
And they're written by Winston Churchill.
All right.
And the copyright date is 1906.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm. Book day today, it seems, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
That is very cool. Wow.
Yeah, I bought them actually about 25, 30, even more, 30 or 35 years ago. I lived on 79th Street, and there was a used bookstore. Mm. And I bought a lot of books there. And I happened to see four books that have the same look about the fabric on the leather and so on. And I picked one out, and this one is entitled Coniston, C-O-N-I-S-T-O-N.
Okay.
And it says on the cover, it says Coniston Churchill. And I picked it up to look at it, and there it was with his signature on the first page. So,
all right, Lisa,
do you think that's worth?
What do you know, Lisa?
Well, let's see. Winston Churchill, the author. What can we say about that?
I don't know.
Well, sometimes I think, a lot of these signatures are printed, and that seems awfully early, which just seems and makes it a little bit more interesting for us. We had a Teddy Roosevelt one from the Guest family, and that did exceedingly well. So I think a little more digging on these.
Okay.
Lisa
because
Thomas.
there's a Winston Churchill who's an American author, and they're often confused because Winston Churchill, the statesman, also wrote, but mm-hmm. I don't believe he wrote any novels.
Yeah, like I'm thinking 1906. Like I don't have the Boer War straight, but he was busy doing a lot of other things.
He was a busy dude.
Yeah,
no,
I wasn't
quite
there yet. But boy, that is really interesting.
I think it could be the American novelist Winston Churchill. We'd need to do a little more digging. It's a little out of our area of expertise. But Ray could give you our contact.
If you guys want to give your email out, go ahead.
Sure. I'm just Lisa at staregalleries.com, and I'd be happy to look into it further for you.
Yeah, most importantly, do you have any like spare bedrooms at your house?
We're very cold up
How's
here.
The weather down there, Sheila? How's it going?
Well, the sun is shining brightly, but it's really, really cold. I had to cover all my outdoor plants.
Oh, boy. How cold is it? How cold is really cold?
Okay. At the moment, it's 58 degrees.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, you get no sympathy from us.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
It's single digits, my friend. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Chris in Brantford very quickly. Hello, Chris. You're on.
Hi, you all. Thank you very much. A couple of things, and I'll really try to be fast. Last year, my wife and I did some serious downsizing, and we're looking at doing some serious downsizing again this year. I have my grandfather and my great-grandfather's silk top hats, circa 1910. They're like new. They're in hard leather boxes. And are they worth keeping, do you suppose, or what?
I'd hang on to them.
Yeah, what a great heirloom.
Yeah, if I had my grandfather, great grandfather's things like that, I wouldn't sell them.
And in the boxes.
And they're not going to make enough money to make an impact and a difference in your life. Maybe you're going to go out and have a nice dinner.
Yeah.
So keep hold for sure.
Yeah, I don't really want to sell them, but it's just a matter of the downsizing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. And the other thing is,
sure.
I have a room screen, three pieces. Each piece is like 6 feet tall. With a nautical scene painted on it, but it was painted by Betty Davis's first husband, Harmon.
Hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, that's just Betty Davis makes it interesting right off the bat, and it's the subject is sort of, what does it look like?
It's a square rig ship. Sailing away on the ocean, you know, in the sky and everything.
Well, not seen him. I'm not sure of him with auction records at all, but it sounds awfully nice and decorative, and we'd be happy to take a look at that. Sounds very, very, very interesting. And the Betty Davis thing makes it super interesting.
I'll send you a picture. Yeah, yeah. He after my grandfather died, my grandmother put a kitchen in the upstairs and rented it out. And the house, our old family house, was very close to the New Canaan, Connecticut train station, spitting distance. So,
okay.
So people, it was an advantage for that reason.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Dave and Troy. Dave, you're on with Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas.
I have a copy of the program from the 1965 Newport Folk Festival, which, as you will recall, Bob Dylan performed
for
Rolling Stones the first time. I was there as a high school kid.
Wow, very cool.
And I was wondering what value might place on that. Over time, I've checked online, et cetera, but I'd be interested in an update and what your opinion might be.
Dave, what sort of, no signatures at all, right?
No, unfortunately.
And what's the condition?
I've got a lot of pictures that go with it of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and I've written a long narrative of that night and of my reaction to it.
And what
but
sort
no
of
autographs in the program? I'd say it's in good to very good condition.
And Dave, what sort of values have you had? What do they range from top to bottom?
You know, I can't recall now. It's varied considerably over the years, so I really don't make much of a note.
You know, people tend to like to collect and keep those things. I'm going to guess we're probably in the $300 to $600 range.
Wow. There were a lot of those made.
More than the other estimates I received in the past.
Yeah. No, I think we've got the Timothy Chalamet effect, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, there's ones that can make quite a bit more than that as well. So depending on your condition, the fact that you got it yourself and there's no question about that, it's a pretty cool thing. But
you
don't sell it.
This
you know,
this area in music history has become increasingly popular with the younger generation.
I think I'm being quite conservative.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just hang on to it then.
Very quickly, we have about a minute here. Kevin is in Sharon Springs. Kevin's been waiting a long time. Go ahead.
My question's, I'll just jump right in, deals with authenticity. I have two artworks. One's a Chandler pastel. One's a Harris Art Deco print. They're in their original gallery framing. How destructive is the process to determine authenticity if there isn't like a label on the back that says this is real?
This is your wheelhouse, Lisa. We have about 30 seconds.
Okay. I would say you need to send somebody photographs of it and any provenance information you have, and a specialist will be able to give you a really good answer about authenticity and what next steps would be.
Because the confusion with them is they also made their own prints of their own works.
Right.
Okay.
So is it real or is it a print? Can you determine that by looking? Or
yes,
do you have to
determine it looking at it either with the naked eye or under magnification. So somebody would just need to take a look at it. Happy to do that for you if you want to get in touch.
Kevin, thanks a lot for the call, and we'll have to leave it there. If people want to find out more about Stair, how do they do that? 800-348-2551 is our number. Remember that for tomorrow. If they want to get in touch, how do they do it?
Start with the website. Have a look there. Take some pictures. Information at Stair Galleries. Lisa at StairGalleries.com. Colin at StairGalleries.com. We're happy to give as much advice as we possibly can and support this great institution.
You know what? Thank you for your support here, and we love you guys. Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having
Cheers.
Us.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Support comes from Prestwick Chase, offering maintenance-free housing options for 55-plus active adults with one- and two-bedroom apartments at cottages in historic Saratoga Springs. 518-584-7766 to schedule tours. And Capital Region Classical at Union College, presenting the Terra String Quartet in works of Haydn, Borodin, and Brahms, Sunday, February 1st, 3 p.m., capitalregionclassical.org. The underwriting department is very concerned about our ability to pronounce classical composers' names, and rightfully so. So they have some very good pronouncers in there for us. Thank you, underwriting department. Thank you all. Thank you to Colin Stair and Lisa Thomas, even to Zach Malloy. Ed Rosen screened the calls. Thank you. Tomorrow, it's Real Estate with Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello. I'm Ray Graff. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.